All right, Tabosai, good morning. Today's daf is Chav Zayin. I want to thank Yehuda for leaving a little bit over for me today on today's daf. So we're going to start from where you left off yesterday, which is four lines up. One, two, three, four. Five lines up from where before the Mishnah on Chav Zayin Amud Aleph. So the Mishnah says the following: Ayidei nefashos asura. I see that I am really the obstacle to the Shear's advancement over here. Baruch Hashem, manish. All right, so it says, I always thought it was you guys, now I realize it's not you, it's me. I thought it was you. I realize this, I'm giving you the classic, it's not you, it's me line. It's not you, it's me. All right, so says the Gemara. So also remember, the Mishnah said, Aydena Fasha Sasur, that ultimately if a woman was taken captive, and the reason she was taken captive was because of some type of capital crime that was committed. So there is an assumption that she was violated by her captors. Now, it's interesting to note is Amarav kegonashi ganvi. Rav said, like the wives of thieves. Now, what's interesting to note is the following. When reading the Mishnah, one would have assumed that the reason the woman was captured was because of something she did. Rav is coming along and saying, no, that often the rule was that if a man was a thief, so first of all, his property and his wife were taken. And if he was accused of a crime or if he was found guilty of a crime, his wife and his property would be taken by others. But Levi Amar Kigon Ishtol Shaben Donoi. So Levi argues, and Levi says, no. It's not in the case of someone who stole, but rather in a case of Ben Dunoi. So we'll say Ben Dunoi was known as, Rashi says, Rotzeach Haya Ve'elazar Shmo. He was known as, he was a murderer, but not just any murderer, like not like just like a recreational murderer. He was a professional. He was known. So someone like Ben Dunoi, ultimately, again, who would have been found guilty of capital crimes, his wife and his property would have been taken. Amr Chizkia qualifies this again. This is only if they were found guilty already of murder, meaning only once the case was tried and they were found guilty, then their property and their wife would be taken. And again, once the wife is taken, there's an assumption that she was violated. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afa Pishlod Migmar Din Al Hariga. And Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. He says, no, even if there wasn't a Gimar Din, simply again, the accusation of such crimes would have normally allowed for the property and the wife to be taken. And therefore, again, she would have considered to have been violated by her captors, says the Mishnah. So we'll say, just you should know, the Rambam, Halacha Lamaisa, accepts Rav's distinction in the beginning. Remember, Rav made the distinction all the way at the beginning of this sugya, because the Mishnah made a distinction between a woman who's captured or taken captive for monetary purposes versus dinei nefashos, versus capital crimes that were committed. So Rav qualified this and said that the only time we could assume that a woman is not violated if she was taken captive, or really taken as ransom for monetary purposes, is when Yad Yisrael Tekifa, when the Jews are in power, and therefore, again, there's a certain fear of the Jewish people around the surrounding Gentile residents. And the Rambam accepts that distinction. If a woman is taken captive for monetary purposes, and it's a place where Yad Yisrael is Tekifa, the Jews are in power, then we assume a woman was not violated. If she ever was taken captive because of certain violations of capital crimes, then we could assume that she was violated. However, if it's not Yad Yisrael Tekifa, meaning if at the end of the day, if the Jews are not powerful, the Gentiles are more powerful, then we assume that whenever a woman is taken captive, be it for monetary purposes or capital purposes, she is violated. Says the Mishnah, Ir Shekav Shua Karkum. So I'll say an extension of the previous case. If you have a city that was Kavshua Karkum, that literally was captured by soldiers, Rashi says, Matzor, really it means there's a siege around it. You have a city in which there was a siege around it. Kol Kohano Shinimtsu Besocha Psulos. All wives of Kohanim in that city are considered to be Psulos. Rashi says, Asuros Labaalein, De Eshes Koin Asura. Because the assumption is that if the Gentile army is laying siege to this city, it means that the women inside the city were violated. And therefore, again, for a wife of a Yisrael, the fact that his wife is violated does not make her Asura to him. But for a Kohen, if his wife is violated, she becomes asura to him. However, but if there are witnesses that she was not violated, and here the standards for witnesses are relaxed, so even if it was an eved, or even if it was a shivcha, and these individuals are believed to give edus that the woman was not violated. However, but a person is not believed to go ahead and give edus about themselves. So meaning, a woman would not be permitted to give edus and say, I was not violated. We'll see, actually, in tomorrow's daf, about whether or not the husband is believed to give testimony about his wife. So we'll see that. Says the Gemara, or minhu reza kasha, baleshes sheba aleir. So we'll say, if you have a baleshes, baleshes is a group of soldiers. Rashi says, chel. Chel al shem shemechapsin kal matmonim. So again, it's a troop of soldiers. So a troop of soldiers enters. We actually saw this Gemara before. Bishash shalom, if it's a time of general peace, chavios psuchos asuros, stumos mutaro. So we'll say, the issue the Gemara is dealing over here is with Yayin Nesach. So the question is, soldiers come into a city, what's the status of wine in the city? So what happens? So it depends. If it's a time of peace, so open barrels. I'll give you the seats over here if you want. So open barrels are mutter. Excuse me. Open barrels, chavios psuchos asuros, the open barrels are asur, but stumos mutaros, but the closed barrels are considered to be mutter, because the assumption is that when the soldiers come in, they're only pillaging the open barrels, but they're going to leave. Again, it's not a time of war. So they're going to take the stuff that's open, but they're not going to take the stuff that's closed. However, b'shas milcham, at a time of war, elu v'elu mutaros, she'ein p'nai l'naseich. But if it's a time of war, then what? Everything is mutter. Why, Rabosai? Because if it's a time of war, the assumption is people are too busy to daven to their gods, right? People are too busy to daven. They're not offering up libations, and therefore all of the barrels are permitted, both those that are closed as well as those that are open. Now, Rabosai, now the Gemara is raising this as a kasha. Why? Because it appears that during time of war, soldiers have no other time for anything other than war. If that's the case, then why would we assume that the women are violated? To which the Gemara gives a very profound answer. Amar Rav Mari, Livol yesh p'nai, linaseich ein p'nai. Because the truth is, there's time to violate women. There's not time to pray. Right? So you got to have priorities, right? So we know that this has played out over the course of human history, that ultimately, again, in times of war, people are preoccupied with all kinds of things. At the end of the day, the ability for the marauding soldiers to violate the women is a reality. So the fact that they don't create Yayin Nesach, okay, their mind is not on Yayin Nesach. But again, at the end of the day, violation of women does occur. So the Gemara Rav Yitzchak Bar Elazar Mishpeit Chizki Omer, Kan Bekarkum Sho'osu Malchus, Kan Bekarkum Sho'malchus Acheres. Oh, it also depends which city they're coming into. If they're coming into one of their own cities, right, meaning a city of their own kingdom, then the assumption is that what? That they're not going to simply violate the women. Look at Rashi. Rashi says over Karkum Shal Osa Malchus, Ainu Rotzla Hashkis Espene Ha'ir, Ukishakovi Shira Samach Mamshato Shomerasi Shomrahi Vihilamas Oveid. When soldiers come into a city that is under their own kingdom, so they're not interested in alienating the local population, as opposed to, and therefore again, it could be in situations like that, that's where you wouldn't run into Yayin Nesach issues, and that's maybe where you also wouldn't run into violating of women's issues. Violating of women. Forget about women's issues over here. Right? Violating of women. However, again, when they're going ahead and they're occupying a city that is part of another kingdom, that's ultimately where all bets are off and everything could happen. So the Gemara says, I don't understand, even Sha'osa Malchus Nami Yevshad de la Arak Chad Minayu. But so now let's even accept this notion for a moment, that when soldiers occupy a city that is part of the same kingdom that they are fighting for, so logically it makes sense not to alienate the resident population, so they're not going to violate women of that city. Okay, let's accept that. The Gemara says, but are you assuming that all the soldiers listen to orders with this? Are you assuming that there's not one soldier, a couple of soldiers that break free of their commanders and go into the city and have their way with the women? It's a case where the army posted sentries all along the perimeter of the city, and therefore, again, no soldiers can enter into the city undetected. So they're protecting the residents. So the Gemara says, still, Iyafshur delo naima porta, is it not possible that the guards are going to fall asleep a little bit? They're going to snooze. They're going to doze just a little bit. Meaning you can't keep vigilant watch 24/7 that someone's not going to be able to come in. Amr Prose, first wide line of Zaina Madalev. Amr Rabbi Levi, Kigom de Mahadr la Lemasa, Shushilta Vikalba Vagavza Vavza. So this is interesting. So Rabbi Levi said that in addition to setting up a guard perimeter, they also went ahead and put up Shushilta. So we'll say Shushilta is a chain. They put up a chain, right? So Shkalba, dogs. Gavza, Rashi says over here that Gavza is maklos v'kismin. They put up thorns. And listen to this, v'avza, geese. Geese. So let's listen to this. I'm sorry?
The Romans did that in Rome. That's how they defeated the Gauls.
I'm not even going to ask how you know that. But all right. But again, good. Good. Baruch Hashem. You see, the internet does produce some good information. Good. All right. So let's say, if you think about it, by the way, it's logical. So what Dov is saying is right. Meaning, if you think about it, dogs and geese are there for what purpose? To go ahead, and again, they make noise. The thorns and the chains are there to create physical barriers. So the idea over here is that Lemaisa, you know, we're not relying solely on the guard towers to watch the soldiers coming into the city, but literally you have physical barriers as well as, you know, this is Talmudic form of alarm system, right? It's a dog, it's geese. It's interesting. And then even the Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Ami bar Zavda. So we'll say, therefore, again, therefore, the Gemara, obviously, this is a very specific type of case you're dealing with over here. So in this type of case, we have an army that is essentially occupying a city of one of their own kingdom, and you have guard towers. And in addition to guard towers, you also have a chain, thorns, dogs, and geese. Then under those circumstances, you could go ahead and you could assume that none of the soldiers entered into the city to violate the women. But obviously, this is very specific. Anything less than this, we would assume that ultimately the soldiers are violating the women. Amar Rabbi Abba bar Zavda, Pligi bar Rav Yehuda Nisiyah Rabbanon. We'll say second wide line. So Rabbi Abba bar Zavda said the following. Pligi bar Rav Yehuda Nisiyah Rabbanon. Rabbi Yehuda Nisiyah and Rabbanon had an argument. Chad Amar kan bekarkum shal osa malchus. Kan bekarkum shal malchus acheres velo kashya. So we'll say they had two different ways of interpreting how to reconcile the Braisa, ultimately again with the Mishnah. So one could be talking about a karkum, a city of the same monarchy, and again when it's a city of the same kingdom for which the soldiers are fighting, that's when we don't assume that the soldiers violated the women. On the other hand, the Braisa could be referring to a situation where it's a different, or I should say the Mishnah is referring to a situation where the soldiers are occupying a city of a different monarchy, in which case we would assume that what? That the soldiers are in fact violating the women. So the Gemara says, "V'lo kasha v'lo midi," and therefore the Braisa and the Mishnah do not pose any contradiction to each other. However, "V'lo kasha v'lo midi," v'chad kashile kohani, or mishani kegol de mehader le lemasa shushilta v'kalba v'gavza v'avza. And the other opinion, who did not subscribe to this distinction between karkum shal malchus acheres and karkum shal osa malchus, the way he explained the distinction between the Braisa and the Mishnah is that the Braisa is essentially setting up a case of where they guarded the city with all of these precautions, the chains, the thorns, the geese, and the dogs, versus the Mishnah is where that did not happen. Amar Avidi bar Avin Amar Rabbi Yitzchak bar Aishan, im yesh sham, Rabbi says, is another interesting halacha. So what comes out from this first piece over here, is that Lemaisa, under normal circumstances, a troop goes in and lays siege to a city. We assume that the soldiers violated the women. That's the assumption. The only time where that assumption is not in effect is when you have two criteria in place. Number one, where the soldiers are laying siege to a city of their own kingdom, of their own malchus, and incredible precautions have been taken to ensure that what? The soldiers are not entering into the city. If you have those two criteria in place, then Eina Chinam, you could assume that the soldiers are not violating the women. So now another qualification. Let's say the city has a hiding place. A hiding place where the women could hide. So what happens? Matzeles ala koanos kulan. So we'll say, this is very interesting. Then that saves all of the wives of the Kohanim. And I'll say, now why does it save all the wives of the Kohanim? Because now we could assume that the Kohanic women, remember again, it's not that we don't care about the Yisrael women, But it's the fact that the possibility that the wives of Yisraelim were violated, that doesn't, quote-unquote, bother us halachically. Why? Because she's still permitted to her husband, right? Meaning it doesn't impact her status. The real status it impacts is for the wives of Kohanim. So now, Rabbi Shon, he advanced something very interesting. That if there's a hiding place in the city, that saves all of the wives of the Kohanim. Why? Because we could assume that they were in hiding. We could assume that these women went into hiding and therefore, again, escaped their captors. And I will say, what this seems to say is, essentially, I don't need to interview each woman and say, were you in hiding, were you in hiding, were you in hiding? But the very existence of a hiding place tells us that they could have escaped their captors. As long as it's possible that they could have escaped their captors, that allows them to remain permitted to their husbands. So the Gemara says, "Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyah, listen to this. Eina machzakas ela achas ma'u." Listen to this interesting question. And I will say, you should know, like, it's heartbreaking, but you know, this was halacha lemaisa for generations. This was a reality that our women had to live with for generations. It's horrifying when you think about it. You know, we read about this a lot in the Tisha B'Av liturgy. If you look in the kinos of Tisha B'Av, the notion of large scale rape was no. In fact, again, we say it in the, there's only one kinah that speaks about the churban of the first Beis HaMikdash. And in that kinah, it goes into graphic detail about Inu Bisulos Yerushalayim, how ultimately the Babylonians were raping the women in the fields, in public. So this notion of the status of women, you know, for us, it sounds academic, but it's heartbreaking to realize how lemaisa this was throughout the generations. So now the interesting question is the following. What happens if the hiding place that we're describing only hides one person? It's a hiding place, but it's a cave that hides one person. So does that save all of the women or not? So the Gemara says, Mau, mi arminan kol chada v'chayda hanaha. So we'll say on one hand, we could say, yes, it does. Why? Because we could say that what? When we look at a particular Kohanes, we could say, oh, she was the one who was in the hiding place. Next, she was the one who was in the hiding place. Meaning, again, it's possible that each one was the woman who availed herself of that hiding place, and therefore she's permitted to her husband. Oh, Dilma, lo aminan. Or perhaps, no, we can't say that. Meaning, once you know the hiding place only held space for one, then you can't assume that any one woman was the one who was in that hiding place. So Mar says, why not? Umayshna mishnei shevilin. Echatomi vechator. But listen to this. Why is this case? We've had this case. Why is it different than the case of two paths? You have two paths, Rabbi. Say, one path is tummy, one path is tar. Rashi says over here, because one path had graves on it. We know for sure they were, you see, but here's the interesting part. Path A, path B, right? So one is the path that's taken, one is, as they say, the road less traveled, right? Why is it the road less traveled? Because there were kvarim on it. So we know for sure one path had kvarim. Only one problem, which is what? We don't know which path is which. So what's the halacha? So the halach be'echad mehen va'asataros. So listen to this. Reuven and Shimon each go down a path. Reuven takes A, Shimon takes B. So they both went down a path, and then afterwards, they both touched sacrificial items, or truma, or anything that's sensitive to tumah. So what's that halacha? So we'll say, now the shaila is they both come to ask a shaila. What's the status of the taras that they touched? So Rabbi Huda Omer, im nishal zebifnei atzmo tohoros. So we'll say, listen to this. So Rabbi Huda says, if Reuven asked his shaila by himself, and then Shimon asked his shaila by himself, then what? They're both tar. Why are both saying? Now again, there's another principle here, which we'll get to in Masechet Sota, which is safek tumah b'rishus harabim is tahar. If you have doubtful tumah in a public domain, that doubt is lakula. It always goes lenience. It's tar. Now the interesting part about that, the novelty in that ruling, is that even though we normally say safek daraisa l'chumra, right? When you have doubt about biblical law, you always resolve that doubt by taking a more stringent stance. Tumah is a little bit different for reasons we're not going to get into right now. So if Reuven asks his shaila independently and Shimon asks his shaila, they're both tar. Why? Because again, when Reuven shows up and he says, look, I don't know what path I went down, no problem. Safik tumah b'rishus harabim, you have a doubtful law about tumah in the public domain, you're tar. Shimon comes to ask his shaila afterwards. Remember, Shimon's shaila is independent of Reuven's shaila, therefore he's also tar. However, shneim ka'achos. But if Reuven and Shimon both show up at the same time, Foshop at the same time. And they say, hey, we have a Shaila. You know, he went down A, I went down B. Then Rabbo say what? Then Tameos. Then you have no choice but to rule them both Tameh, because there is no way to decisively rule them both Tar. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says, Rabbi Yossi, bless you, Rabbi Yossi and Benkachu, Benkach Tameyin. Rabbi Yossi says, no, they're Tameh no matter what. Vamir Rav, Vitim Rabbi Yochanan. So Rabbi Yossi, now Rabbi Yochanan resolves this. Bevas Achos, Divriakol Tameyin. If they come to ask at the same time, then everyone agrees that what? They're Tameh. Rabbi Yossi, you understand that, right? Because if they're both showing up in front of us at the same time, so I must rule them both Tameh. There's no other option. Because remember, the only other option is what? The other option is what? Rule them both Tar. But that's impossible, right? Because I can't rule them both Tar if I know for sure that one took path A, one took path B, one definitely went down the Tameh path. So I can't rule them both Tar, and I can't subjectively say, well, you know what? You look a little shady. You're the Tameh guy, right? You're the Tameh guy. You know, you're the Tara guy. So I have no choice but to rule them both Tameh if they ask at the same time. B'zeh achar zeh, if they ask one after the other, also means that they ask independently. Divrei akol tahorim. So everybody agrees that they're Tara. Where's the machlokes? Lo nechleku, listen to this. Ela beva lishal alav v'al chaveiro. Here's the interesting case. Let's say Reuven shows up and Reuven asks his shayla. He says, oh, while I'm here, I also need to ask a shayla about my brother, about Shimon. About Shimon. So also I say, now the Shaila is, what happens if he asks for himself and about Shimon? Now remember, Shimon's not here, but Reuben's asking on his behalf. So one opinion says that that's as if Shimon was there. That's Basachos. And since it's Basachos, they'll both be Tameh. And the other opinion holds that no. As long as Shimon is not present, that's like what? That's like Zachar Zeh, and therefore they're both Bitar. So now Abbas like coming full circle. Vahacha. Remember, let's come to the case over here of where there's a hiding spot. Remember, what was the case? There's a hiding spot, and there's only enough space in the hiding spot for how many people?
One.
For one purpose. For one person. Vahacha, vahacha nami, cave. I'm sorry. Vahacha nami, kevan deshari luhu, lukulu, bevas achas dami. So, Bo say, listen to this. In the case of the city, this should be like a case of basachos. Because after all, again, when the soldiers leave the city, what happens? So to speak, all of the women of the city, so they approach the Beis Din at once. Now, obviously, they're not literally approaching, but all of their cases essentially come before the Beis Din at once. This is a case of basachos. What happens in basachos, Rabbi Osei? What happens in basachos? Right, kulam tameos. Ultimately, everybody has to be ruled tameh. To which the one says, one second, that is not true. Hachi ashta hasam vadei katuma. So I say, no, your comparison is not good. You know why? Because in the case of the paths, there is definitive tuma. And here's what we know in the paths. What do we know? One path is definitely tameh. That we know for sure. Hacha miyemar de'itmur. But say, remember, do we know definitively that these women were violated? No, there's a very strong suspicion. There's a very strong, almost like a presumption that violation occurred. But it's not the same as definitive knowledge. Therefore, again, in the case of the Shnei Shevilin, if Reuven and Shimon show up at the same time, I understand why I have to rule them both Tameh. Because there is a definitive Tuma in this case. But in the case of the Nashim, in the case of the wives of the Kohanim, there's no definitive Tuma. Who says in a case of Bas Achaz, I have to rule them all of Tameos? Hacha miyemar de'itmu. So by Ravashi. So I will say, so the Gemara goes ahead and leaves this question, but you should just know the way that Rambam paskins is halacha l'maaseh like this. First of all, we paskin that if there is a hiding place, that hiding place does in fact save the women. Now remember, when we say women, we're only talking about a very small segment of the population, namely the wives of Kohanim. So if there is a hiding place, that is enough to establish that the women avoided their captors. Not only that, but we paskin that even if the hiding place went ahead and what? Only was able to hold one woman, still we assume that each Ashes coin was Osaha Isha, was that woman who was in the hiding place. So the existence of a hiding place, and even if that hiding place is so small that it only is able to contain one person, and I will say this is obviously in the absence of Eden one way or the other, that we assume that each Ashes coin was the woman who was in that hiding place. We don't compare it to a case of Bas Achos, of the Shnei Shevilin, because like we just said before, the Shnei Shevilin, there is definitive Tuma, here there's only Safek Tuma. By Ravashi, Amar lo nechbeisi v'lo nechmeisi maho. So that's another interesting shayla. Let's say a woman says that what? That I was hidden. Excuse me. I did not hide, but I was not violated. So there was a hiding place in the city, but I didn't use the hiding place. But I'm telling you, I also wasn't violated. So what's her status? Mi aminon amud beis. Mi aminon mali l'shaker. So I will say, do we say? I will say mali l'shaker is another form of migo, which is another form of hapesha asar hu hapeshetra. I should say, as another form of hapesha asar hapeshetra, which is another form of migo. Essentially, what is this woman saying? This woman could have very easily not said anything. Not said anything. Because if there's a hiding spot, we just established before that what? That she's safe. Here she's coming forward and volunteering information. She's saying, I didn't hide, but I'm also telling you I wasn't violated. So do we say Ma'ali L'Shaker? What? Why would she lie? Because again, remember, why would she lie about this? Because she could have easily either said nothing or advanced another timeline that would have allowed her to remain permitted to her husband. Oh, Dilma, Lomrinon. Or perhaps no. Now that she tells us that she did not hide, that means again that she goes back to the previous chazak of having been violated by her captor. So the Gemara
say that if this is something which normal people would know, like, did she know such a thing? Is this like common knowledge that if there was one hiding place in the whole city that this would get them off the hook?
No. What the idea of here is there was a hiding place.
I'm saying the fact that she comes along and says Loyin Faisi, does she even know that that's relevant? She could think that's relevant.
No, because on Facebook.
Does she know that this is an out for her? Does it have to be a situation where she knows this is an out for her?
Oh, sure. I mean, she's coming to Beis Din to tell Beis Din that she should be permitted to her husband. And they ask her why. And she says, because I didn't hide. I'm telling you straight, I didn't hide, but I wasn't violated. What she knows in terms of like the Migo Mali L'Shaker, that we don't know. All we know is that she's advancing a claim that on one hand hurts her, but it's so ridiculously honest that we say we probably should just believe her. Should we just believe her on the fact that she's compromised herself with her honesty? Does that not in and of itself speak to the veracity of her claim? So the Gemara says, that why is it different than the following maisa? Well, so listen to this. There's an interesting choshen mishpat case. There was a man who went ahead and rented a donkey from his friend. Right, Amarle. I'm sorry. He rented a donkey to his friend. Right, so I rented my donkey to Reuven. Amarle, I say to Reuven, lo tezel b'orcha dinar pakod. Don't go by the Pakod River Road. Why? Dika Maya, there's always flooding, and you're going to lose my donkey. My donkey's going to get swept away. Zilba Archa Dinarash, right? I don't care about you. I care about my donkey, right? You'll float, right? But the donkey's not. So the Gemara says, Zilba Archa Dinarash, go instead the Narash Road. Dileka Maya, because there's no flash flooding in the Narash Road. Va'azal Ihu Ba'archa. They will say, no, it's amazing. When we were in Eretz Yisrael, so we saw, you know, even by like En Gedi, so we saw these flat, you know, we think about flash floods, so what do we think about? You know, whatever, the water's coming over the sidewalk. You know, you see in En Gedi the incredible power of those waters. They literally hollow out caverns. So he's saying, don't go by the Pakod River Road, because you're going to get washed away. Instead, go by Narash. Okay, what happened? The Azal Ihu Ba'archa Dinar Pakot. And what happens? Sure enough, what does Reuven do? Right? Reuven takes the Pakod River Road. Now, I will say again, it's not because he's trying to be a nudnik. It's probably because the Pakod River Road is probably shorter than going the Narash Road. So he goes by Nar Pakot, Umis Chamra, and the donkey dies. However, what happened? Also, the Kamei Rava. So Reuven came before Rava. Reuven, the renderer, came before Rava. Amrle in Ba'archa Dinar Pakot Azli. I did go on the Pakod River Road, but Mihu Lo Havu Maya. But I'm telling you, the donkey, there was no flash flooding. The donkey died because... whatever it is. Right, he had a heart attack, fine. So the idea over here is, what happens in this case? In this case, again, remember, Reuven could have easily said what? Nothing. He didn't have to say anything. Donkey died. Now, obviously, this is assuming, I guess, that he must have taken the carcass with him off the Pakod River Road. But he could have just said nothing. Instead, what is he saying? He's volunteering information. I did go the Pakod, but I'm telling you, it didn't die because of flooding. So Amar Rava. Rava says, Mali L'Shaker. So we should believe Reuven, because why should Reuven lie? Because he could have very easily advanced the claim that I didn't go on the Pakod River Road, I went on the Narash River Road, and the donkey died because of natural causes. So the Gemara says, "Amrle Abaye." Abaye says, "No, Mali l'shaker b'makom edim lo amrinon." So we'll say, we do not say Mali l'shaker. We do not say this. Mali l'shaker means what vested interest or what purpose, what benefit does a person have in lying? Abaye says, we do not advance that claim where there are edim present. Rashi says, "B'makom edim da anan sahadi dechol shayte ikam maya." Essentially, what Abaye says is, we don't say Mali l'shaker in a case where there is testimony against you. What does that mean? You just said you went on the Pekod River Road. Once you said that you went on the Pekod River Road, there's edus, so to speak, that's what? There's always flooding on the Pekod River Road. Just because now you said there was no flooding, the donkey died of other causes, so we don't listen to you. The Bosai is very important you sowed. So we don't say Mali l'shaker b'makom edim. So therefore, Bosai, the assumption would be what? So that we can apply it to this case as well. Woman comes along and says, I didn't hide, but I wasn't violated. Well, 1 second. Once you say that you did not hide, then what? Then there's, so to speak, edus. What's the edus? That she was violated. So again, we don't say Mali l'shaker, we don't say what purpose is there for her to lie when there's edus, when there's testimony. And since, again, there's circumstantial edus that a woman is violated when soldiers come into the town, therefore, again, we don't say Mali l'shaker. So the Gemara says, 1 second, Hachi hashta hasam vada ika edim dika maya. 1 second. Again, you can't compare those cases. I will say, apparently, the Pekod River Road was always flooded. It was always flooded. So therefore, there's real edus there that if you say you went to the Pekod River Road, oh, that's enough. You said it. You sealed your own fate. Donkey died in water. Hacha, vada itmi? Chashashu. Rabosai, remember, as much as we're saying that a woman is violated by marauding soldiers, we're never saying that what? That's 1,000% reality. What we're saying is what? Yeah. It's a very strong chashash. It's a very, very, very strong possibility. Is it definitive? No, not definitive, but a very strong possibility. Ubemakom chashasha aminon. Excuse me. So the Gemara says, "Umatam chashasha aminon." Meaning, "Umakom chashasha aminon." What? Umakom chashasha aminon. Mali the shaker. So we'll say what comes out from the Gemara over here is like this: when there are times where your honesty is not going to go ahead and save the day. Namely, when your honesty goes up against what we'll call edus. Definitive information, then your claim of honesty is not going to hold any water. So even though Reuven says, yes, I went on the Pekod Valley Road, on Pekod River Road, but the donkey didn't die in water, the donkey died of natural causes, we say, sorry, we're not listening to you, because once you say you went on the Pekod River Road, there's edus, it's definitive, that there was water, and therefore the donkey died because of the water, and therefore, again, you owe me the cost of the donkey. However, again, when there's not definitive information, but just the chashash, Mali l'shaker will apply. Therefore, bringing this full circle, if a woman comes along and says, I was not in hiding, but I was not violated, so we believe her. The halacha is we believe her in such a situation. We say Mali l'shaker, she has amigo. Essentially, she could have just advanced the claim that she was in hiding, or she could have said absolutely nothing, and the existence of the hiding place would have saved her. The fact that she advances this information, since it's not definitive, it's not edus that a woman was violated, therefore her claim in fact saves her. So remember the Mishnah said, that if there's any level of edus that she was not violated, any level of edus, even if the ed is an eved or a shif, they are believed. So the Gemara says, "Va'afilu shifcha di de mehemne." Is that to say? Are we even inferring from this that even her own shifcha? Now, I will say there is an assumption that a woman enjoys a very close relationship with her shifcha, with her maid servant. It's what we're going to use the expression libo gaspa. Libo gaspa means that she is very comfortable with her and would engage in all types of activity in front of her. So the Gemara says, you're telling me that even the edus of her shifcha is enough to save her, is enough to guarantee that lamaisa she has not been violated. Or many, is that true? Lo tisyach edimo ela api edim. So we'll say this is an interesting case. If you look at Rashi says over lo tisyach edimo. Rashi says Meseches Gittin he shchiv meirash shakasav umasar get leishno amanash meis yehe get lemafrei velo tizakik lechalitza. So this is an interesting case. Let's say a man writes a get to his wife. A man is terminally ill. He doesn't want. He doesn't have children. Doesn't want his wife to fall for yibum, to fall into yibum or chalitza. So what does he do? He's going to give her retroactive get. I have to get. So how does that work? So the get will be chal 1 moment before I die. So now let's say he's sick. So it's it's the 10th of Adar. He's going ahead and he's giving her this get. Now he doesn't know when he's going to die. Now there's an interesting halacha, which is that he is not permitted to be alone with her after the issuance of that get. Because if a man is alone with his wife after he wrote a get, before he gave it to her, right? That's, then it becomes what's called a get yashan. And a get yashan, an old get, cannot be used for divorce purposes. Therefore, again, although this is nice on one hand to prevent her from ever coming into the clutches of yibum or chalitza, it does preclude husband and wife from ever having yichud together. So therefore, Lotus. Now, Bosa, again, if they have yichud, all that happens is the get is negated, meaning that they're still married. There's no, just the get is negated. He'd have to write another get. So what's the halacha? Lotus yachid imo ela api edim. Therefore, there could be no seclusion except with witnesses, meaning, obviously, and if it's witnesses, it's not seclusion. The idea is there's no seclusion. There has to be edus. Va'afilo api eved, va'api shivcha, chutz mishivchasa. And anyone is believed to say that there was no yichud, or anyone is believed to be there to prevent yichud, even a eved a shivcha, except for her own maidservant. Why? Mipnei shaliba gas b'shivchasa. Because I will say, what could happen? Because a maidservant and her mistress enjoy a very close relationship. Therefore, again, liba gas, Rashi says, utishamish b'faneha. So much so that she would even have relations in front of her maidservant and trust the maidservant not to say anything. Not to say anything. So Amar Papa, so what do you see over here? You see from here that a maidservant is not believed to give testimony regarding issues of her mistress. So Amar Papa, no. B'shvuya hekilu. The truth is, you're right, under normal circumstances, that is true. A woman's maidservant is not believed. When it comes to cases of shvuya, of a captive, so the standards are relaxed a little bit. Rabbi says, that has been the dominant theme throughout the sugya. Rav Papa says, ha b'shivcha dida, ha b'shivcha didei. Oh, it depends. His servant is believed. Her servant is not believed. V'shivcha didah lo mehemna. Is that true that her maidservant is not believed? Ha katani ein adam meid al atzmo. Yet we learned in the Mishnah that a person is not permitted to give testimony about themselves. Meaning, if a woman is not believed to say, "I was not violated." Ha shivcha didah mehemna. We infer from that what her shivcha would be believed. So the Gemara says, "Shivcha sanami katzma dami." No, it's just that a woman's shivcha is like her own person. Rav Ashi amar havaha b'shivcha didah. So the reality is both statements were made regarding her own shivcha. So we'll say now we have contradictory statements. We have one statement that seems to indicate that Lamaisa, her shivcha is believed to say that she was not violated. And we have another statement that seems to indicate that her shivcha is not believed. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you, havaha b'shivcha didah. V'shivcha siha. We'll also listen to this. V'shivcha mechza chazya v'shaska. The truth is, what a shivcha won't lie. Shivcha won't lie. But you know what a shivcha will do? A shivcha will go ahead and will see something and what? Will remain silent. She might see something that happens with her mistress or that her mistress does. She won't lie for her mistress, but she will be quiet. So how does this play out? Hasam dishtikasa matirasa lo mehemna. So I'll say, in the case of the get, right, where the shifcha's silence. Remember, the case of the get is where the husband is dying. He wrote his wife a get that'll be chal retroactively 1 month before his death. So the halacha is that the husband and wife can't have yichud, or it invalidates the get. So in that case, we don't believe the shifcha that they weren't alone. Why? Because what is her silence? Dushtikasa matirasa. Her silence essentially says that they were not alone, and therefore, again, we do not believe the shifcha. However, hacha dishtikasa osarta mehemna. But Rabbi Yosef, remember, in the case of the shvuya, if the shifcha remains silent, then what happens to her mistress? If the shivcha doesn't say anything, then the automatic assumption is that the mistress was violated. So in the case of where her silence ultimately assers her, then when the shivcha speaks up, the fact that she gives testimony, she's absolutely believed. In other words, what the Gemara is saying is like this. A shivcha is not going to overtly lie for her mistress. What will she do? She'll keep quiet. So therefore, in the case of the get, where her silence ultimately is what will permit the woman, then we have to be concerned that the shivcha is lying, so to speak. She's withholding information. But in the case of the shvuya, where what is it that permits the mistress? It's the testimony of the shivcha. Then we believe the shivcha, because we do not believe that the shivcha is going to say untrue things on behalf of her mistress. Therefore, when she says something, we believe her. To which the Gemara says, "Hacha d'shtika asadim hemna hashtanami asya umishakra." But 1 second, why don't we see over here also that she'll come along and lie? Meaning, how do you know that? Meaning, at the end of the day, in the case is in the case of the woman being violated, the mistress being violated by the soldiers. How do you know that the shifcha won't lie on behalf of her mistress? To which the Gemara says, "Tarti lo abda," because a shifcha will not do two things. We'll say, what does that mean? Meaning, she won't go ahead and be silent about the actual act that occurred, and she won't go ahead and lie. In other words, again, we'll say it's pretty much the same answer that lemaisa. True, a shifcha will be silent about certain, perhaps, indiscretions of her mistress, but she will not go ahead and lie, overtly lie, on her mistress's behalf. Ki ha de mari bar isik. This is an interesting case, Rabbi Yosef. Like, mari bar isik, va'omer lechana bar isik, asa li acha mi bechoz. Rabbi Yosef, listen to this. Mari bar isik apparently had a brother whose father, so what happened? Mari's father, whatever the circumstances were, went off to live in another town with their youngest brother. So Mari saw this brother in childhood, but then did not grow up with this brother. What happened? Mari's father died. Guess who shows back up in town, right? This fully grown young man who claims to be Mari's brother. Mari's brother. Okay, and what does he want? He's not coming, you know, to catch up on old times. What is he coming for? Right, money. He's coming for Yerusha. I'm also a son. We're brothers. We're the sons of the same father, and therefore I want a piece in the Yerusha. Only one problem. So the long lost brother says, "Okay, hi, I missed you guys so much. Show me the money, right? Where's my portion? Where is my portion of father's estate?" So what does Mari say? Amarle lo yidana lacha. I have no idea who you are. Right? I don't know who you are. Meaning, I appreciate, you know, if you are my brother, I'm sorry for your loss as well. But I don't know who you are. You showed up over here. I don't recognize you. I don't know you. So what's the halacha? Us look at me, Rav Chista. So they came before Rav Chista. Amarle shapir ka amar lacha. So Rav Chista said to this young man, look, Mari's saying good. He doesn't know you. So he brought a riot from the pasuk that what happened when the brothers were reunited with Yosef 20 years later. So what happened? Yosef recognized them, but they did not recognize him. Why? Because what happened when Yosef left them? He was a young boy, 18 years old, didn't have a beard, and now he had a beard. In other words, we'll say it's not just the beard, right? The idea is that he matured, he grew up, they didn't recognize him. So you see that passage of time prevents even family members from recognizing each other. So Rav Chista said to this long-lost brother, go bring witnesses that you are indeed a brother of Mari, or a son of the father. Amarle isli sahadi. So this man, the brother, we'll call him the brother, said, I have witnesses, umistafimu minei de gavra alamahu, but they are afraid to testify in front of Mari because Mari was a very powerful man, and the witnesses are afraid that Mari's not going to like the fact that they're taking some of his Yerusha, and he's going to take action against them, and therefore the witnesses are afraid to come to court. Amarle lidide. So Rav Chista turned to Mari and he said, zil ay sinu at. He said, Mari, okay, the responsibility is interesting. The responsibility is on you to bring witnesses that this man is not your brother. Okay, so you, meaning, we'll say what that means is, now, how do you mean witnesses that he's not your brother? Go find people who know this guy in the place where he grew up and bring them, bring proof that he's not your brother, he's not related to you. So Mari turns to Afghanistan and says, Amrle, Dina Hachi. So we'll say, you know how sometimes like I don't mean to question the Rav, but you know, are you sure this is the halacha, right? Are you shy? I'm not questioning Chas v'Shalom. But if I were to question, the question would look like this. Hey, are you sure the halacha is like this? Hamotzi mechaveral. And I will say, now in this case, really Murray's right. I will say this makes absolutely no sense. The halacha is hamotzi mechavera alav haraya. That if you want to extract money from someone, so the burden of proof is always upon the extractor. So Mari says, Rav Chista, what are you talking about? I have to go and prove that he's not my brother? What kind of outrageous psak halacha is that? I have the money, right? I'm the muchsak, I have the money. He says he's my brother and he gets a piece of the Yerusha. The burden of proof is upon him. So listen, sir, I'll say, Amar lei. So Rav Chista responds, you're right. Hachi di'inin alacha ulekulu al michavercha. This is what I paskin for you and all of your powerful friends. In other words, what the Chista was saying was, look, you guys intimidate people. you intimidate people because you're rich, because you're powerful. And so the truth is, normally the halacha is hamotzi mechaber alav araya. The problem is over here, the only way to really deliver a just decision is to place the burden on you, because no one wants to show up in Beis Din testifying against, even though they're not testifying against Mari, but ultimately their testimony is going to deprive Mari of some money. No one wants to. And therefore, Rav Chisda says, and Rabbi say, Beis Din has the right to do this. Beis Din has the right to go ahead and create different mechanisms for arriving at the truth when they see that there are difficult circumstances. So Mari, we're not singling you out, right? I guess, you know, you're the 1%, right? So, we're not singling you out, but we are, right? But we'll go ahead and we'll say that the responsibilities ultimately of testimony are now upon you. So the Gemara says, Kitanoi. So Kitanoi. Now, Bosai, remember again, the reason why the Gemara is bringing this up, Kitanoi. The Gemara says, this is Machlokes Tanoim. Zu Edus Ish, Zu Edus Ish, the Ish, Zu Edus. This testimony, now, Bosai, what this testimony is referring to is the testimony of Shvuya. The testimony that a woman was not violated. This testimony, Ish V'isha, Tinok V'tinokes, Avia V'ima, V'achia V'achosa. So we'll say everybody could give this. Everybody could testify on behalf of a woman that she was not violated. A man, a woman, a child, a girl child, a male child, her father, her mother, her brother, her sister, Avalo B'na Ubita, but not her son, not her daughter, Lo Avda V'lo Shivchasa, not her servant, not her maidservant. That's one brisa. V'tanya Idach, another brisa, says, Hakol Ne'eman L'Ha'id, everyone is believed to give testimony about her, Chutz Me'emena, except for herself, she can give testimony about herself, Ubaila, and her husband. Derav Papi V'derav Ashi Tanoihi. I was according to Rav Papi and Rav Ashi, it's Machlokis. I'm supposed to say it's Machlokis Tanoim about whether or not her Shifcha, her maidservant, could go ahead and give testimony about her. So the Gemara says, Derav Papi V'derav Ashi Tanoihi. According to Rav Papa and Rav Ashi, this is a machlokes tanoim. Rav Papa mi lema tanoihi. According to Rav Papa, isn't a machlokes tanoim. Amel Rav Papa. Rav Papa will say no. Now, both remember, Rav Papa and Rav Ashi are the ones who said above that her shifcha is believed. So therefore, they have to also accept the fact that there are other brisos that say the shifcha is not believed. The way they'll reconcile those brisos is to say how? Machlokes tanoim. Rav Papa, however, said that a shifcha is not believed. Is not believed. Now, remember, everything we have quoted until now has backed up that basic assertion that a shifcha is not believed. So does Rav Papa also say there's a machlokes tanoim? To which the Gemara says, Amar Lecha Rav Papa, Kitanya hi b'masicha lefi tuma. When the Braisa says that a shifcha is believed, Rabbi say, what case is that when a shifcha is believed? That's when she's masicha lefi tuma. Rabbi say, so masicha lefi tuma means what? She gives information not in the context of testimony, but how? Of her own volition, casually. Ki hal dechi asar avdimi amrav chanan kartigna. So when Rav Chanan from Kartigna mishtai maisa ba lifnei Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi va amar Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi mishtai maisa ba lifnei Rabbi. So we'll say, so again, the machlokas as to how this happened. So some say there was, it was Chanan, Rav Chanan from Kartigna was telling over a story that happened or a maisa that came from Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. And others say it was Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi who was telling over a story that happened about Rabbi. In any event, what happened? Ba adam echad shai masiach lifi tumo. There was once a man who was just conveying information, Masiach Lefitumo, was conveying information casually. And what did he say? Va'amar, Ani v'imi nishbinu labena ovde kochavim, my mother and I were taken captive among the idolaters. Yatsasi lishov my nabosai. Now what did he, listen to what he said. Whenever I went out to draw water, da'ati al imi, my mind was always on my mother. And I will say, now what does that mean, my mind was always on my mother? Not I was thinking about, I was watching her. When I went to draw water, I always kept watchful eye on my mother. Lilaki dates when I went to gather wood, that telling my mind was, I was always watching my mother. So I'll say, so what is he essentially saying? My mother never left my sight. Now he was just giving this information casually. And what's the halacha? V'siya Rebbe l'kuhuna alpiv. And based on this, Rebbe allowed her to marry a kohen, i.e. that he assumed that she was not violated. And I will say, remember, there are opinions that say that a son is not necessarily believed either, right? We saw one of the brisos. But yet, what do you see from here? Even according to the one who says that a son is not believed to go ahead and give edus about his mother, we see when is he believed? When he's masiach lefi tumo. When ultimately, again, he gives of his own volition. And Abosai, so the halacha is that under normal circumstances, her shifcha would not be believed to go ahead and give edus, with the one exception, which is if she's Masiach Lefituma. That's how the Rambam paskins, that everyone is believed to give this Eidos about the woman, except for a Shifcha, because again, Libo Gaspa, because there is an assumption that she would cover in certain respects for her mistress. But Lemaisa, if it's Masiach Lefituma, if she gives this information of her own volition, then in fact, she is believed. All right, then we'll stop over here, pick up here tomorrow.